Good morning, everyone. The reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 2, the first 12 verses. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you very much, Julie, for reading for us. Good morning. My name's Matt, one of the pastors here. It's nice to see you. Nice to be getting close to those Christmas celebrations together. Well, let's start with some controversy, hey? One of the quite important things in our world at the moment is the idea of political correctness. Speaking with careful and appropriate language, doing things in appropriate ways to try and not put people offside. Political correctness, not trying to cause unnecessary offence. Companies, especially public figures, understand that it's important to be politically correct. You don't want to get caught being politically not correct or saying something that's not politically correct. On one hand, it's good, I think, to be careful with words and to communicate clearly and to communicate kindly. But at the same time, then others will say on the other side of the debate, well, lots of people will say that political correctness has also perhaps gone too far. I've got a couple of examples here. You might remember last year this controversy. They were going back through books written by Roald Dahl and changing the language. So as an example, one of the boys in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Augustus Gloop, was originally described as fat, and in the revision they changed him to be described as enormous. And a lot of people came out and said, "This is silly, why are you changing kids' books?" And some people said, "I'd rather be called fat than enormous anyway." I'll let you judge that one. Another example, earlier this year at a school in New South Wales, it was decided that it would be more politically correct if they renamed Mother's Day as Family Day, probably out of good heart. And of course, there are complexities for some people around Mother's Day, and to be inclusive of everyone and all sorts of different types of families. But then, of course, lots of mothers came out and said, "Well, there's one day a year that's about us, and now you've taken that away too." Well, when it comes to Christmas, there are also lots of things around the political correctness of Christmas. Some businesses and organizations, when it comes to talk about Christmas, would rather have slogans like "Enjoy the Holidays" or something like that to be inclusive rather than to say "Merry Christmas." There are similar things at my daughter's school. There's a lot of caution around just not wanting to force all the different kids to celebrate Christmas. Some of them come from different cultures and have different religions. They want to make sure everyone's included and has options to celebrate different sorts of religious festivals. And the kids have learned about different religions and different religious festivals from other cultures as well, which I quite like, actually. Or I saw on the news this week there was a debate that's been going on around Christmas and around Woolworths. Woolworths have been selling gingerbread men for Christmas, except maybe I shouldn't say that because Woolworths have been clear to say this year they're not gingerbread men, they're gingerbread people. Gingerbread people. Again, I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not that's sensible or whether that is political correctness going a little bit too far. You can decide. Now, I don't want to actually talk today generally about political correctness. I'll leave you to debate those things over coffee after church. But as we come to the second chapter today of the book of Matthew, and as we look at this story of the wise men following the star, I want to show you that the point I think Matthew is making for us, is a point that I do want to acknowledge is not very politically correct. The point Matthew's trying to make for us is a point that I don't think it would go down very well if a politician was to say this publicly. But politically correct or not, I think Matthew is trying to show us from this part of the Christmas story that Jesus, the king who has been born, Jesus is king of anyone and everyone, and every single person should give their allegiance to him. Politically correct or not, I think Matthew is showing us that Jesus is the king of anyone and everyone, and every single person should give their allegiance to him. All should bow before this king. Now, to show you how I think Matthew is making that point, I want to focus on two of the features of the story that's been read out for us. Two of the odd parts, actually, because there are some strange things about this story of the wise man and the star. And I want to think about the star a little bit. What do we make of that strange star? What's going on with that strange star? And then I also want us to think about these mysterious people, the Magi or the Magi. What's going on with them? And then after thinking about those two features of the story, I then want to ask us, well, how might we react to this idea? How might we react to this story and this slightly not politically correct idea that Jesus is for everyone and for anyone? Let's then begin by thinking about the star. I don't know what you think of when you think of the star in the Christmas story. I don't know what comes to mind for you. I don't know what you picture. For me, I think I probably picture some sort of, maybe this is the same for you, I probably picture some sort of little magical floating orb that kind of travels in front of the wise men, kind of just leading them across the desert, kind of like a dog owner leads a dog with a leash for a walk, the star kind of leading them slowly but surely along to Israel and eventually to Bethlehem and to the stable. And then I imagine the little orb of light sort of just hanging above the stable like it might do on a little stick or something above your nativity scene at home. I don't know if that's what you picture. It is for me. But when you think about it, it's kind of a strange picture, isn't it? I mean, I guess God could have sent a little floating orb of light that went in front of the wise men. But I reckon when we picture the story like that, it probably moves us subconsciously into the realm of myth and fairy tale, because it does just sound like a story that just isn't quite true, does it? It does have that vibe of a kid's storybook. Now, some might say, well, what does it matter? This isn't even a question worth worrying about. Why do we care what the star was like? God made the stars. He can do whatever he likes with the stars. He could send a flying orb of light. He could send a magic star. Exactly how God deals with the stars isn't really something I worry about. I just trust that the story happens. I look to the main point of the story. That's all I need to do. And there is something in that. But also, I do want to acknowledge for some of us, when we come to a story like this, the story of the wise men and the star, we actually might find it quite hard to be convinced by what's going on, because some of us are a bit more just naturally skeptical. And when you read something like the story we've just read, it does kind of seem like it's got a fable or a fairy tale kind of vibe. And you can add to that that, I don't know if you know, but this story, this is the only time it comes up in the Bible. It only comes up in Matthew's gospel. It's not there in any of the other gospels. There's also no other records of this story in other sort of historical accounts or anything like that. So this is the only place we get the story from. And you kind of think, well, did Matthew just make up some really strange story for us, this little fairy tale, or is it real? And I do want to mention then, so there are some interesting theories on what this star actually might have been that perhaps are a bit more real life than the picture books might have you think. What might have been going on? Well, some say that God might have sent a comet. There could have been a comet at that time flying over the desert. And the comet, you can imagine a comet. Comets kind of point a certain direction, don't they? So was there a comet that was pointing the wise men over to Israel? Maybe. The big problem with that theory is people say, well, if there was a comet, then other cultures, other people would have recorded that there was a comet. And normally that is what would have happened. There's the same problem if you think about maybe the star was some sort of supernova, or I think that's an exploding star that lights up the sky really brightly for a few months, an exploding star or something like that. But again, it has the same problem. If there was something like that in the heavens, then wouldn't other cultures have noticed, wouldn't other cultures have written down the story and have records of this star? I think probably the most interesting theory I've come across was actually that this might have been something more astrological. It's really only been the past 20 years or so that this theory has gained quite a lot of support from historians and from astronomers as they've dug up things and researched. And what they've found is that in these ancient times, ancient astrologers, they paid close attention to, you know, those famous 12 constellations, the ram, the bull, the scorpion, the crab, the zodiac constellations, where we get the horoscopes and things like that from. I know horoscopes is a bit of a dirty word in a church, but ancient astrologers, they knew those constellations, they studied them closely, and they associated those different constellations with different parts of the world. So for the region of Israel, Palestine, Aries, the ram, was the constellation that represented that part of the world. And they've gone and they've looked, and it just so happens that in the year 6 BC, which is the year most people think Jesus was born, by the way, but I think we got the calendars just a little bit off, it just so happens that in that year, the planet Jupiter, which is the planet of royalty, rose right in the middle of the Aries constellation. Perhaps not that big a deal for people all around the world, for Chinese or other people watching the skies, but a sign to an ancient astrologer living in this part of the world of a new king in the Israel region. That happened in April of 6 BC. Could it be that that's what got the wise men curious? Could it be that that's what got them to set off on this journey to meet this new king? Maybe that's what they meant when they said they saw the star rise. Add to that then that in December of that year, December of 6 BC, and this is all true, undisputed facts, all of the different planets all rose in the Aries constellation in the same period. That's something that only happens every 3,000 years. And there was an eclipse of the moon and Jupiter. And in that month, Jupiter also would have been seen to be moving relative to the constellations. And then it stopped for a few days and then started moving back in the other direction. It's quite a list of things that were going on in the skies in that year. And a growing list of experts is saying that to an ancient astrologer, that would have been a clear sign that something significant was going on in the Israel-Palestine region. Maybe that sign of the star rising in April of that year did get the wise men to start traveling. And maybe it was those various things in December that once the wise men had arrived, that would have been what Matthew recorded as the star hanging over Bethlehem as Jupiter stood still for a few days. Some would say, well, it could have happened like that, but it doesn't really matter. And I think that's probably true, but it's good to know that there is some real evidence. There's some real things here that might make you think of the story less in a fairy tale fable sort of way and more in a historically plausible, rational kind of way. These are realistic things that could have occurred. And I am going to, for those who like this sort of stuff, I'm going to put a link to a great podcast about this sort of stuff by John Dixon on our Sunday Hub. So do go and check that out if you'd like to dig in further. You might wonder if we're talking about the zodiac constellations then, and we're saying, okay, well, maybe those things have something real to them. Maybe I should start reading the horoscopes a bit more. I don't want to encourage that, just to be clear. I'm not encouraging you to go and get the Sunday Mail and have a look at your horoscope. I did look up mine this morning, and it said I should put my own needs first for this week. So looks like I'm having a good Christmas. But no, the Bible is not saying that the wise men are something to emulate, or that the stars are a good source of information. In fact, precisely the opposite point is there, isn't it? Because the wise men, they see the star and they kind of end up vaguely in the right part of the world. They get to Jerusalem, they get to the right country, but they still don't have much of a clue of who this king is and what's actually going on. I think that's partly why the story doesn't make sense if it was a little floating star of light, because if it was a little floating ball, it would have guided them straight to Bethlehem. Why would they have ended up in Jerusalem in the first place? The stars maybe tell them to get to the right country. Maybe it's got enough information to do that. But actually notice that it's God's clearer revelation in the Bible. That's where what gets the wise men to the right spot in the end. They go to Jerusalem. They hear the scriptures read from those chief priests and those teachers of the law. From Micah 5, it says, out of Bethlehem will come a ruler who will shepherd my people. It's the Bible that actually gets them to the right spot. And it's no different for us. If we want answers, actual answers about this world and about what God's promised, if we want actual answers about how we should live, it's the Bible that is the clear source of God's revelation to us. It's the Bible that has clear answers to us. It might be that the heavens declare the glory of God in different ways, but that doesn't mean we should be silly and start trying to read the stars, and particularly to go and read the Sunday Mail horoscopes. But if Matthew's point in this passage, and I'm saying that this is Matthew's point in the passage, if the point is that Jesus is king, and if Jesus is king not just of Israel, but of everyone, that's what I've been saying the point is, if Jesus is king for the whole world, then it does make sense, doesn't it, that God would be saying this is a big deal, and God would be saying this is for everyone. And it's not surprising that God might announce his new king in more ways than one, and more than just to his people, even announcing that Jesus has come through the movement of his stars. It's not that surprising, is it? Well, secondly then, let's think a little bit more briefly about the wise men, the Magi. Actually, I've been a little bit politically incorrect in calling them the wise men, because there's nothing in the story we just had read out that says they were men. They could have been women. We actually should call them, as the Bible calls them, the Magi, the Magi. It's a word related to magician. These were sort of ancient magician, advisor sort of type people. They could have been males, they could have been females. You'll also notice that this says nothing in the there's nothing in the story about them being three of them. There were three types of gift that they brought. That's where that comes from, but we don't know how many they were. There's also nothing specifically about them being kings. I know in my little nativity scene at home, they have little crowns, but there's nothing about them being kings in the original story. I was almost going to get us to sing We Three Kings of Orient Are today, but it's just not quite right, is it? Three kings. I'm not saying to delete it from your Christmas playlist, but I didn't think we'd sing it today. But today we're thinking about what we do know. And there are some things that we know about these mysterious magi. Israel at this time in history was part of the Roman Empire under the rule of Caesar. And to the east, where the Magi would have come from, is an empire called the Parthian Empire. You can see on this map that the Parthian Empire covered a big area all the way from Turkey through to Iraq and Iran, across to India. And there are records of Magi being the advisors, part of this Parthian Empire. They were the religious, spiritual, scientific experts. And they were known particularly for their astrology and for watching the stars. And they were also very politically powerful. So they might not have been kings, but they probably would have been connected to the kings and the rulers of this Parthian Empire. Perhaps even bringing those expensive gifts on behalf of their kings. Now, we don't know too much more than that. They came from there somewhere and they were called the Magi. We don't know how they might have traveled to Israel, whether those camels were real or not. We don't know whether they were interested, why they were interested in a Jewish king. There's lots we don't know, but we do know we're dealing with real people in a time in history where it's quite plausible that they might come and travel into Israel. Now, interestingly, I think one of the reasons that Matthew is keen to tell us about this happening, of these magi coming across, is because of some of the references to this happening in the Old Testament. As Lauren said, we're going to spend a lot of time in Matthew over the coming weeks and months, and we're going to see again and again and again how Matthew is always keen to show us how Jesus fulfills what was predicted, what was expected from the Old Testament. And here's one reference, there are a few others as well, but here's one reference from Psalm 72. Lots of people say this is an allusion to the visit of the Magi. This is what it said a long time before Jesus was born in Psalm 72. It said, may he rule from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. May the desert tribes bow before him and his empires lick the dust, his enemies lick the dust. May the kings of Tarshish and of distant shores bring tribute to him. May the kings of Sheba and Seba present him gifts, May all kings bow down to him and all nations serve him. Now, as we've seen, the Magi weren't really kings, but you can see how this picture of this from the psalm lines up, can't you? Those from distant lands, perhaps coming on behalf of kings, bowing before him, bringing gifts, bringing tribute, as it says there in the middle. People from distant shores bringing tribute to him. And think again about the point that Matthew is trying to make for us. We're in the second chapter of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 1, you might remember from a couple of weeks ago, we had that genealogy that Paul took us through. We saw that Jesus was in the line of many Jewish heroes. And then in the Christmas story last week, we saw that Jesus was born to Jewish parents and the promise was that he would save his people from his sins. It's all been about Jesus coming as the Jewish Messiah, the Jewish King. But now we have the announcement of God's King written in the stars for all to see. Now we have people from the nations coming to worship God's new King, fulfilling Old Testament prophecy. Can you see what Matthew is trying to show us? That Jesus is the one who will rule from sea to sea. Jesus is the one who all nations should serve. This is a king not just for the Jews, a Messiah not just for the Jews, not just for any particular culture. Matthew is showing us that Jesus is king of anyone and everyone. Matthew is showing us that each person should give their allegiance to him. Now, I wonder then what your reaction is to that slightly, a little bit politically incorrect idea that everyone should bow before this king. Well, I want to point out for us that within this story, Matthew actually gives us a number of different reactions to Jesus just from the characters in the story. And I want to use those to help us think about what our reaction might be. So we might react to hearing that Jesus is king of everyone, including me, including you, including everyone in this city, including everyone in this world. We might react to this idea by reacting a little bit like Herod. How does Herod react to this news of Jesus, King Herod? Well, Herod is very threatened, isn't he? At one level, this is understandable. He's the king and he's been told there's a new king coming. That's threatening. Now, if you work as a graphic designer and you work at a small kind of company and your company only needs one graphic designer, and if you heard that your company was interviewing for a new graphic designer, I think you'd be a little threatened. I think you'd feel a little concerned. I'm a dad. If my kids told me there was a new dad coming, I would have some questions. Herod's told there's going to be a new king, and so he's freaking out. Now, this also, by the way, fits completely well with what we know about Herod from history. He had a history of being completely paranoid. He was very superstitious. It completely lines up that he would believe exactly what this Magi said. He's very worried. He's keen to listen to anyone who's going to tell him about any sort of conspiracy theory or any disaster that's coming. Now, really, if Herod understood well, actually, he would understand that he doesn't need to be threatened. Jesus is just a little baby. And he hasn't come to set up a political kingdom. But Herod doesn't know all that, so Herod feels threatened. How could we react and feel threatened by this news like Herod does? I work with uni students a couple of days a week, and I get to be taught the slang and the language that Gen Z uses. There's a Gen Z term, one Gen Z term that I learnt this year. The term is called main character energy. Main character energy. It's a phrase that means you act like you are the main character in your story or in your movie. If you've got main character energy, then you're confident. You know you're important. You want to make the big decisions because your story is about you. You know you're the hero of your story. And if others aren't acting how you want, it's not you that's the problem. They're the enemies. Maybe when you think of the idea of Jesus being the king of everyone, including your king, you find that idea threatening because it means you're no longer the main character. If Jesus is king and you align yourself to him, it means you're no longer ultimately the one in charge. And that might change how you decide certain things. That might even change how you act in certain situations. That might change how you react in certain situations. It means saying that whether I think I'm right or whether what I think is wrong is not necessarily quite as important as what my king thinks is right and what Jesus thinks of how I'm acting. Bowing to King Jesus might change lots of things about your life. It might change how you plan your week so that you can be here to serve at church, to serve the king, to serve his people. It might affect how you use your money if he's the king and ultimately he's in charge of it. Jesus might even call you to do something quite radical or scary that you don't really want to do. And if you're acknowledging him as king, well, you're saying, I'm okay with that. I'm ready for that. I'm ready to follow my king. That can be a little bit scary. Maybe we should feel threatened at the idea of Jesus being in charge. At least some of the time we should. If we don't feel threatened, perhaps we don't understand quite what we're being asked to do. It's almost no small thing to let somebody else take the reins. But we also need to remember that Jesus is nothing like Herod, who we've been talking about. Jesus is not an evil dictator like Herod, who's all about his own power. Herod did all sorts of wacko things and had all sorts of people killed and did all sorts of nasty things. But Jesus is the humble king, the gentle and lowly king. Jesus is the king who came not to be served, but to serve. He's the king he's not a king who puts others to death like Herod. He's the king who willingly went to his own death for the sake of his people. So it's good news that he's the king. He's the one we want to be in charge. And there's no need to hold back from offering yourself to him, following him, learning to obey him. He's a good king. Now, another way we might react to Jesus' kingship, we might react a bit like Herod, but we also might react like some of the other characters in this story who you might have missed. Did you pick up the characters, the little Jewish chief priests and teachers of the law who were just in there just briefly? The Magi come to Jerusalem, they say the Messiah is here, everyone hears about it, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law are the ones who go and look up the scriptures to check where he'll be born, and they say he'll be born in Bethlehem. But notice how many of the Jewish leaders go off to Bethlehem to meet this new Messiah. Doesn't seem like they do, does it? Their reaction seems to be one of apathy. It may well be that that's the case for lots of us. It certainly is the case for lots of people in our city, that their reaction to Jesus is one of apathy too. Christmas is here. The King of More is born. Most people do still know that story, but how many really care? That could be because you're skeptical. You write this all off as a fable. You don't think it really happened. It could also be, and this could be a danger for lots of us, that you sort of believe this story of Jesus being the king, but then you don't really want to take that next step and make the choice of making him your king. You could say, well, yeah, do I believe Jesus is king? Yeah, sure, I think this probably happened. Sure, and I'll come to church every now and then. I might even give him a little place in my life tucked away among other things. I think sometimes, this is going to sound controversial again, but stay with me. I think sometimes we have been unhelpful in our language sometimes by saying all you need to do to be a Christian is to believe in Jesus. Just hear me out here. Sometimes I think we've been helpful in our language by saying all you need to do to be a Christian is believe in Jesus. I think it's true that all you need to do to be a Christian is believe in Jesus, but it's certainly not about achieving a certain standard or living a certain way or anything like that. But it is a little bit more than just an intellectual belief, when we use that word belief. It's more than just thinking, yeah, I think Jesus probably was king. And to put it fairly clearly, you could say, well, the demons thought that Jesus was king, and Satan knows that Jesus is king. But to follow Jesus is to believe, not just with your intellect, but with your action. Not just thinking that he's king and then being apathetic about it, but making the choice to say he's going to be my king. The choice to align yourself to him. I believe that he's king. I believe that he's the one I want to follow. When the Apostle Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, he said he rejoiced because he'd heard that they'd turned from idols to serve the living and true God. Following Jesus is about changing your alignment, believing that he's king and aligning yourself to him. You can actually have doubts about who he was and all those sorts of questions, but you can make that choice to make him your king and to choose to follow him. Is that a choice that you've made? The teachers of the law and the chief priests in the story, they seem to know intellectually that a Messiah would come. They certainly knew where to look in the scriptures to find out where he was going to be born. But did they actually care? Did they really believe it would happen? Did it affect their lives? Were they seeking the Messiah? Did they actually care about following this new king? Or for them, was it all just an academic exercise? This Christmas, will we give Jesus more than just a tip of the hat? will we align ourselves to him and follow him as king. And that's the third way we might react to Jesus. Herod was threatened, the people were apathetic, but the Magi come to Jesus and they worship. Now, we don't know, of course, if the Magi had any real idea who Jesus was and who Jesus would be. We don't know if they paid any more attention to the rest of Jesus' life after the Christmas story. We don't know if they ever understood the gospel or heard about Jesus' death or resurrection. But Matthew does use them here as an example to show us the reaction that all of us should have to King Jesus. If he's the king of everyone and if everyone owes him their allegiance, this is the right response to the baby born. Look at how the Magi respond. They come to Bethlehem in verse 10. It says, when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Overjoyed. Are you taking a moment this Christmas to remember the joy of Jesus coming? The joy that comes with knowing that this king has come. The joy that comes with knowing that this king has welcomed you. The joy that comes with knowing that if you're part of his kingdom, you're part of a kingdom that will last forever. And then on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary and they bowed down and they worshipped. When we come to King Jesus this Christmas, will we bow down? Will we worship? Will we acknowledge him as our king? Will you acknowledge him as your king and as king of everyone, the only true king? And then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Are you willing to give to him what you treasure? To let him rule over your treasures? To give him what's most important to you? And if your answer to those questions is yes, then I will ask, what are we going to do about it? If he's our king, if he's the rightful king over me, and if he's the rightful king over my street that I live on, and if he's the rightful king over the school families at the school we go to, if he's the rightful king over your office and your workplace and your work colleagues, if he's the rightful king over that community organization that you're involved with, if he's the rightful king of your social group, then politically correct or not, we do have something to share, don't we? We can share about the true king. I know for me there are lots of situations where I'm happy to say, yep, Jesus, you can be in charge. I'll make you king over this and that. But maybe it is that situation where I have the chance to speak up for Jesus in a place where people aren't quite so receptive. Or maybe that's when it's a bit harder, where it maybe wouldn't be quite so politically correct to talk about my faith. It's easy in those moments to say, maybe I'll just take charge for now. Maybe I'll just choose how I act in this particular situation. If Jesus really is king, then we have good news to share. So how will you react to what Matthew is saying today? Will you be threatened? Will you be apathetic? Or will you be like the Magi? Will you come to this king and adore him? Will you come to this king and worship him? And will you tell others about the true king, the king of anyone and everyone, the rightful king, the king of everyone has come? This is good news. It's worth celebrating. And let's pray for his help. Father God, we thank you this morning for Christmas, for the king who came, born in the manger. We thank you that he is more than just a king for the people of Israel, that he's a king for the whole world, an eternal king of all people, of all time. Father, we want to come to King Jesus. We want to find great joy in him. We want to bow to him. We want to give him everything we have. So will you help us this Christmas to love and adore your true king? Will you help us to tell others about him? In his name we pray. Amen.